It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I'm concerned about you.
No, it's the holidays mostly, and the fact that I'm still not sleeping for shit.
Yeah, I know what that's
like. It's been like months now, and last night, took a Benadryl, couldn't sleep, took a hot shower, still couldn't sleep, still got up for like an hour or two after that. It's kind of ridiculous.
Well, don't you like have a CPAP and everything?
I do, yeah. No, I don't know what it is exactly. The only prevailing theory, which isn't a great one, is that for quite a while in there, I just stopped my diet and I stopped my exercise, like, completely.
Oh, I see.
And especially the diet one. I'm now old enough where if you don't eat the right thing bad enough and long enough, it can fuck with things like your sleep.
Yeah.
Which is a shitty part of growing old, by the way. I'm on the verge of having to be a person who says onions don't agree with me. That's insane to me, especially because I love onions. But, like, there are consequences nowadays for onions. That's just ridiculous. Anyway, no, I'm just doing okay. I'm just, I'm waiting for the holidays to be over. Hello, everyone. Welcome.
Speaking of the holidays.
Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that's getting nuttin' for Christmas, because it's the only podcast in the world that ain't been nuttin' but bad.
Well, that's how it works.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 250.
Quarter thousand.
Christmas Eve.
When we hit episode 1,000, I might feel sad about that.
Why?
I might feel like we've done this too long.
500 is going to be pretty long. I mean, think of it. We're halfway to 500.
Yeah.
And I don't know if episode 1 seems like yesterday to you, but it seems pretty far away to me.
It does. For some reason in my mind, 500 is still like an accomplishment, whereas the 1,000 would be like a prison we're being punished, so we have to I don't know. But the sad thing is, she's being punished. No, I guess it's not. I shouldn't say sad because I mean, I imagine we'll get to episode 1. Like we've got no impetus to stop doing these.
That's true.
And neither of us is planning on moving basically ever.
But it'll mean we've I don't know how long we will have had to do the podcast to get to 1,000, but it'd be like 10 years.
Longer than that, I think. Because we're in year 5 now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's 52 a year. So it's like 20 years. 20 years of doing this.
It is hard.
Let's go shopping instead. Anyway, you said who we were and what. Yes. All right. So, let me give you the quick rundown here how this works. We have a hat. It's magical. It has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People like yourselves email into that email address with little notes, little comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its exothermic servants.
Not too bad.
Well, especially because you know what I'm going to do for the next one we're recording?
No.
All right, you'll see. We, its exothermic servants, some of you know what the next one will be based on that, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the show. And this is next week.
Yeah, what you were hearing there was not Tony inhaling. That was me, because that whole explanation was done by me impersonating Tony.
Yes, he's getting very good at that. And here's the neat thing. His lips didn't move the entire time.
That's right. But my lung capacity is not very good, so I had to really breathe in.
Today, the producer did something at lunch that prompted me to say, are you trying to do ventriloquism, or are you just trying to make a funny voice? And she said, does it matter? And I said, no, because you're failing at both. She was trying to make the beer display talk. It was weird.
People, this should be Christmas Eve for people, right?
Well, no, because they're not going to listen to it on Christmas Eve. But that's when it's going to go up.
Yeah.
On Christmas Eve. So, do you hear what I hear? A podcast. Recorded by some dudes. They don't edit or do second take.
Except that one Frank time in episode 12.
Tribute. I'd say you guys are lucky anything makes it out onto the air, but that might be the wrong thing. Question. Was your birthday this last week?
No, my birthday's in February.
I thought it was a different time, but yeah. Azure Talon's phone told him it was your birthday this last week when it was also his birthday.
Oh.
And so he was very excited. I'm like, William tends to not talk about when his birthday is, but I've been around for enough of them that I should have a sense, and in my mind it's late winter, early spring.
I've mentioned it on the podcast, at least indirectly, because I think I've pointed out that I'm the second born in my family, and the oldest brother was born on Valentine's Day, and I was born a year and 2 days later.
Okay, there we go.
February 16th.
I was going to get there. You didn't have to tell me.
Well, recently I found out that some famous person's birthday was also February 16th, but now I don't remember who that person was.
I was looking the other day, because you know there's a weird paradox to a group of people and who has a common birthday. Like, to guarantee somebody has the same birthday, you'd need 365 people in the room to guarantee two have the same birthday. But to, like, guarantee with, like, 99.8% likelihood, you only need, like, 30 or something.
Yeah, it's not a very big number. That's right.
It's weird. And I've seen it, and it's very complicated charts and shit. It's really weird. But, yeah, I don't understand it. Twiggly's really going to town on that pipe cleaner. The thing that was on there broke off, and so Trish put a pipe cleaner on it, and it's proven to work pretty well.
But your birthday's in January, right?
My birthday's January
21st. And we're both Aquarius.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm Aquarius by a matter of hours. Well, I'm a triple Aquarius.
Yeah, that's what
my moon sign, my sun sign, and
that's what you've said.
And also, as fascinating as I've always found that, I don't believe in any of that anymore.
See, I don't either. Well, I never did, but for some reason, I always find it interesting.
I super did. I really thought, like, I was Aquarius, like, because it seemed to match up really well.
When I was a kid, I was really fascinated with the Zodiac, and it concerned my mom, because she's like, don't believe in that stuff. I said, well, I don't, but I don't know, it's still interesting. This whole, I don't know what interested me about it. I don't know what still interests me about it.
1 billion Chinese can't be wrong. wait, yes, they can.
I can't even explain why I find it interesting. It's not because I believe in it, because I don't, but I just find it interesting. I do not know why. Not the predictions, just the whole
concept of astrology.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I do think it's cool that they could so fairly sophisticatedly map out the travels of celestial objects at such an early time in history. Oh, he's stuck. His claw is stuck. Mm. Oh, well. He just looks like he has a question. He keeps raising his hand. So, how is your Christmas?
Well, as usual, I can't say here. This is 2 weeks ahead of. Is this 2 weeks?
No, 1 week.
1 week. Okay. I still can't tell you exactly where I'm going to be.
Yeah.
But I'm probably not
probably
there.
It'll be different than Thanksgiving.
I'm not there on Christmas Eve. I'm probably still in Coralville.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If anyone's listening to this on Christmas Eve, I'm just home. I probably won't go anywhere until Christmas Day.
Pourquoi?
But just how it is. Mm. We don't normally do anything on Christmas Eve. When I was... there was a time in my life, in my previous marriage, where Christmas Eve was kind of...
You just got yourself unhooked. Why would you get back? My cats are dumb.
Where?
Yeah, now you're stuck again. I have no sympathy this time.
My wife's family's stuff was Christmas Eve, and then maybe we'd do Christmas with my family kind of deal.
Yeah.
When I was...
That is not uncommon.
When I was growing up, and I'm sure we've talked about this before, when I was growing up, we would do the whole, well, you can open one gift on Christmas Eve, and there'd be a church service with candlelight Christmas service or whatever on Christmas Eve. But when I left home, Christmas Eve really kind of stopped being a thing for me personally and eventually for my family. So we just do things on Christmas.
So I believe we've discussed before the show QI, the British panel show hosted by mm-hmm. Stephen Fry mm-hmm. that I adore, where they ask you interesting trivia questions and stuff, and you get points for being interesting and you lose points for being boring. Mm-hmm. And frequently it's a lot of things you wouldn't expect to be the real answer. And if you say what's expected, you lose points.
Sure. But,
and it's a British panel show, so mostly just people like to joke around and shit. But he asked one time, he said, why does the royal family open their presents on Christmas Eve? And people made a couple of jokes, but nothing that great. And he's like, so why do they? And nobody knew. So, I can't remember her name now. There's a comedian from there that I really like. But she didn't know, so she just like, is it because they're fucking crazy? And Stephen Fry, without missing a beat, said, no, it's because they're fucking German. Because technically the Windsor family is from Germany originally,
that's
and it is
true.
A German tradition to open Christmas.
Is that, that's a German tradition?
Apparently, yes. Mm. I think I actually knew that before they had said it, but I was like, oh.
Well,
yeah,
in,
he's just like, no, it's because they're fucking German.
In the Nutcracker, the original story.
Yeah.
That's how it starts. It's Christmas Eve, and the kids are sort of kept in this room while everyone thinks being prepared, and then it's time for the Christmas Eve festivities to start, and that includes opening gifts. So I suppose,
yeah.
But I mean, I don't think that's why. I think the reason I don't think my parents did it every year. I think sometimes they just felt like, I don't know, they wanted us to not have to wait all night.
We
long.
Got to open one.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, and it was a big deal that we got to open one. But it was always, like, we didn't pick, and it was always the shitty one. Like, it was always, like, the aunt and uncle who gave me towels.
Oh, well, maybe. That was
so
to set
I'm
you
like,
up to be really...
Why was I still excited? Great, now you straight up broke it, asshole.
Well, what are you doing this year for Christmas Eve?
Well, we will be leaving the afternoon of the 23rd. Because I've got just enough vacation left to make that happen. And driving up to Trish's family. I guess down to Trish's family is what we say, because it's technically south of here. And this year, so a portion of the family, Trish's brother, lives on the East Coast. And his wife's parents live out there also. And they have kids and everything. So we do every other Christmas thing. And this Christmas, they're going to be here. So it is, as Trish likes to say, whole family Christmas, which is cool and horrifying because we all stay at the house and we don't super all fit at the house, especially now that there's two little ones that they bring with. So it's a little bit crazy, but should be fun. So we'll be there, yeah, Wednesday night and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, come back Sunday. And in fact, Saturday... This wasn't intentional, but we have now basically created... There's going to be essentially a family reunion at this fried chicken place that their family really likes on Saturday at lunch. Because we were going to go there, and so Uncle So-and-so was going to show up, and now Uncle So-and-so and other uncle and aunt and a bunch of people are showing up. So
that's nice.
That'll be neat.
When do you guys have the Jesus cake?
Jesus cake would... probably on Christmas.
So...
The happy birthday, Jesus.
Tomorrow...
Yeah, Christmas dinner, which this year is in the which is like at noon. Yeah, so midday on Christmas.
So,
well, is the start. There's usually leftovers, and we eat more of it, and we'll see how many pies we have.
Yeah,
that's always a factor too. But yeah, we'll have Happy Birthday Jesus cake. I think just one this year. I don't know. We had two last year. It got weird, but we'll see. I haven't been there. Well, no, I was there. Oh, I'll have to talk about that. Went and saw my niece and Annie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I was there for like 2 seconds. Like literally we went to the play before going to their house, got to their house at like 11, and then I slept until I woke up, got the stuff in the car and went to get Trish cause she was over at her sister's house. So I was there unconscious for maybe a half hour. but yeah, she was in Annie, and so we saw that. And the, I haven't talked about this, right? Because it was just
you talked about that you were going.
Yeah, it's a children's thing. It's ages 8 to 18 are involved.
How old's your niece then?
She is 10. Okay. She will be 11 like next week.
Is she your oldest?
No,
niece slash nephew.
She's the oldest on that side.
Okay,
but on my side. Mm-hmm. Bucho is 14.
Okay.
And Garrett's 18 and he's in college.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there's a little, but yeah, she's the oldest on the producer's side of things.
Okay.
And given that I hate Annie, not the character, the character also. I don't like Annie. Given that, it was really good. With a couple of exceptions, there were a couple people who flubbed some lines or forgot some lines and stuff, but just a couple. In general, everybody performed really well. The singing, you know, you're like, oh, it's kids, so the singing will be whatever. Again, with a couple of exceptions, the singing was really good. Annie's terrifying. I think she's just a robot designed to play Little Orphan Annie. Like, and apparently, like they said, like she's like that all the time. That's she's just that chipper and happy and on, and it was terrifying. But she was really good. Like this was perfect for her. At first, I was like, "Oh, it's too bad my niece didn't get Annie." But then I'm like, "No, there would be no chance. This girl is Annie." My niece got to play Pepper, who those of you familiar with the story may know as the jerky orphan.
Okay,
which is hilarious. She had the second line in the play, which is her just yelling really loud, "Shut up!" And she's the one who, like, every time they're like, oh, isn't it cool? She's like, no, it's stupid, you know. Like, she's the negative one, which looked like a blast to play. And it was cool. Afterwards, we took her, because her parents weren't there that night. It was just us and Trish's youngest sister. And so we went out afterwards to Steak and Shake and had fries and shakes and hung out. I think that's cool. I mean, she's right at the age where I remember that being a cool thing. Like, if you can hang out with the older kids and do stuff. So that was pretty cool. I started a new audiobook this morning.
Yeah, what's that?
It's called Hard Magic. It's by Larry Correa, who is mostly known for writing the Monster Hunter International series, which I purchased one of them. I have not started reading that. This is it's basically a 1930s pulp novel, like a detective sort of story, except it's an alternate history in which about 80 years prior magic showed up in the world. And it just started. It looks interesting so far. It was not the book I intended to start, but this morning when I went to the gym, I went to pull up the book I intended to start, and apparently I haven't even downloaded it. I purchased it, but I forgot to download it. So I was like, I'll do this. What I did not remember about this book is the narrator. It is narrated by one Mr. Bronson Pinchot.
I don't think I know who that is.
He is perhaps most famous for having played a Mr. Balki Bartokomus from Meepos on a sitcom called Perfect Strangers in the 80s.
Yeah. Okay, so...
I will have you kicked out of my house if you don't remember better than that. Come on.
No, I do, but he was in other things. He was in other things.
Well, to a degree. He got... super fucking typecast. And that show went on for 8 seasons. So
it did?
Yes. Went on for 8 seasons.
Jeez.
Spawned a spinoff that was actually slightly more successful than it. In fact, technically, Perfect Strangers is responsible for the creation of Steve Urkel.
Really?
Yes. Family Matters was a spinoff of Perfect Strangers.
It was.
The mother worked as the elevator operator in the building where the two of them worked starting in season 2, and there was an episode where her husband the cop showed up, played by Reginald Velenzonson, and then like a year later they got their own show.
Boy.
Yeah. And out of that was born the Urkel. But anyway, I adored this show. I lived show.
There was that video game based on it.
Nothing's gonna stop me now. .com. And I've seen him in things. Like, I know what his regular voice sounds like. I would not have known it was him if it hadn't said so at the beginning. Mm. But knowing that, when I listened, if I listened real carefully, I could tell. But I really had to sort of, like, try and listen for it. he's really good at it. Like, really good. Mm. Already he's doing, like, different voices for different regions of the country, because there's a lot of different places in the U.S. we've been so far. And so I looked up stuff today. Apparently, this is his jam. He's done, like, over 100 audiobooks. Mm. Audible.com named him Narrator of the Year in 2010. Mm. This is his thing. Mm. His other thing is buying and renovating historic buildings. He does this all over the freaking place. He once did it to several buildings in a small town to try and revitalize the town. Like, it's crazy. So that was fun. And the book seems interesting so far. It's called Hard Magic. It looks good. I'm sitting on the DVR are the first two episodes of The Expanse and the preview for the pilot of The Magicians. We have not had a chance to watch any of those. I have finished the first season of Twin Peaks.
Oh.
Which ended on, like, a billion and a half cliffhangers. Like, it was really one of those, like, big in the 80s and 90s where, like, the last 5 minutes of the last episode, like, this person's about to kill this person. This person's body was found. This person's about to cheat on somebody with this. Like, all is about to happen. And then we... And of course, our hero, like... has a gun pointed at him and it goes off and then cut to credits. Like, just all the cliffhangers. But so, yeah, I haven't watched the rest yet. Kitten, you know, no, you can't love on the microphone. That'll cause problems. I know, you want loves. I don't have enough hands for it. Tonight was our, we don't call it a Christmas party, but our work's Christmas party was tonight.
Not on Christmas Eve, but...
No. They tend to... Kitten, this is not helping podcasting. If you unplug something or something, I'm going to kill you. Just so you know. Anyway. They do it the week before Christmas because a lot of people take that week off.
Sure, sure.
And they do it on the Thursday before Christmas because on the Friday, or the Thursday of that week, because on the Friday they give us what they call the gift of time, which is 3 hours off of tomorrow. Because they used to try and sort of combine them, but then it got weird because they serve a lot of food at the party, and it's a little weird. It's weird enough if the party starts at 3 and goes till 5. It's really weird if the party, like, starts at noon and goes till 2, and then they're like, everybody go home. Like, I think they tried that 1 year, and it was weird. So.
Yeah, right.
This is better. So tomorrow, we're going to leave work at 1, Trish and I, and go get a little lunch, and then go to the 2:30 showing of The Force Awakens, which I read AV Club's review of today.
Yeah.
And it actually made me a little more excited to see it.
That's good.
And I don't feel like it really spoiled anything. I mean, in a couple of cases, it tried to. Like, it told me the name of the actor who is a certain character that I didn't know, and that would probably be a spoiler if I had any idea who that actor was. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I have no idea when I'm going to see it, but I will, but...
Yeah. I think that's it for my week and for my Christmas. So, how's your week been?
Well, I've been reading a lot of stuff lately.
Nonfiction.
No, I read, The Wizard of Oz, and I read Alice in Wonderland. And this stuff was following up. I did read that, the novelization of Peter Pan, but more recently I read the original short story for The Nutcracker. Because I was interested in all these stories because of the fact that what these four stories have in common is they involve a 7 or 8 year old girl going to a, you know, a fantasy land or whatever.
Which used to happen a lot more back in the days when the chief medication for kids was laudanum.
Well, I mean, I just think that's an interesting coincidence between all these stories. And they're pretty far apart in time. The first one was The Nutcracker, I think, in the early 19th century. And then the second one was Alice in Wonderland, which was, you know, after the Civil War, not long after it, I think. And then... Wizard of Oz was in, the first book was in 1900, and then...
Oh,
Jesus. So many cats.
No, that was Ezzy, not Jesus. And then
calling on Jesus to save this freaking cat.
And then Peter Pan was
1901 or something.
11, 19, something like that. So they're all spread out, but they all have the same thing. And the age of the girl is about the same, and the things that happen are very similar. And so I thought, this is kind of interesting. I'm just going to read all of these kind of in a small group and see, you know, if there's any kind of what other kind of patterns there are.
The descendant of that great literary tradition is the Zack Snyder movie Sucker Punch, because humanity is doomed.
Well, I mean, anyway, it interested me, so I read Alice in Wonderland and Wizard of Oz. I don't know if I'm going to read all 12 or 13 other Wizard of Oz books, but the first one was more interesting than I thought.
I recently went down a wiki rabbit hole for Frank Baum and the Oz stuff. I got to give it credit for being seminal, but so much of it just seems so... Like, okay, there's a little kid, and they want a story, and you make up a story. Awesome. When you write it as a book, maybe adjust it so it, like, makes sense. And it seems like he didn't.
Well, Wiki does not do the books justice, or at least the first one. I mean, I didn't really have any interest in reading Wizard of Oz, but I thought, well, you know what, I'm going to, because of this thing. I was curious about this whole thing. And I just got done reading Alice in Wonderland. So by contrast, the Wizard of Oz book was a little bit dry and slow at first. But it got better, and it's a good story. The wiki articles, I don't think, do them
well. And some of the later books don't work as well. And actually, some of the later books,
that might be true.
He basically uses Oz as an excuse to reintroduce characters from other non-Oz related books that didn't do so well.
Yeah, right? Seriously, that's right.
Dorothy encounters characters from other books that didn't sell for shit.
But here, the stuff. The first thing I would say about it is, everything they cut out and rearranged for the film, made perfect sense. Like everything they did was smart, and the film is actually a fairly good representation of what's in the book, minus the stuff that you probably don't need. That said, if you don't read the book, you miss a lot of cool stuff about the other characters, not Dorothy.
Yeah, there's a lot more backstory and stuff like that.
Like, to me, the Tin Man story is probably the most interesting, and it's really cool. And I'm glad just for that part of reading the book. But another interesting thing that I noticed that is kind of in the film but doesn't come out at all. I mean, you'll never notice it, but you will in the book, is, okay, so the Cowardly Lion.
Yes.
Okay. The interesting thing about the Cowardly Lion is that after they meet the Cowardly Lion, they introduce him as the Cowardly Lion to everyone new that they meet. He introduces himself that way even, but nobody else is... I mean, the Scarecrow is not introduced as the stupid Scarecrow heartless... I mean, it's Cowardly Lion. He alone is named for the particular, I don't know, weakness, I guess, that he has. But also... let me ask you a question. I don't know if this is how this is going to come off, but so when he's first introduced, he's engaging in some cowardly behaviors, okay, and Dorothy kind of calls him on it, and he says, "Yes, I'm a coward," and they talk about how he wants to go to the Oz to get courage. So
if I were king of the forest, what would a person
normally guess would be these cowardly behaviors that someone's noticing and pointing out to them?
Trish had to do that to me today too. She's like, "Okay, pretend you're a normal person and this happens."
I don't mean that. I'm just saying in general. I'm not asking your opinion. I'm just saying in general, what kinds of behaviors would a person be exhibiting that someone's like, "Geez, you're a coward. You really need to get over that."
Stabbing people in the back. dating somebody purely so they can beat up your enemies.
Oh, come on. You know what I'm talking about.
Generally speaking, when people are talking in that sort of glib sense, it is acting cowardly, shying away from any sort of aggression or conflict.
Simpering, you know, that kind of thing.
Flinching away.
Okay.
Surrendering like you are a freaking Frenchman.
Running away from a fight.
Yes.
The thing about the cowardly lion in the book is he never does any of those things. There even is a situation right after they meet him where there's a possibility of some combat, and he says, well, there's no chance we're going to win this, but I'll fight, and I'll keep fighting till the very end. He never exhibits any of those types of things.
I believe in the case of the cowardly lion, his primary cowardly attributes involve going against his principles when it is politically expedient.
No.
I believe that's his primary cowardice.
No, it isn't.
He used to be pro-choice, and then
no,
in the general election.
This is what he's doing when Dorothy accuses him of cowardice. He's roaring really loud to intimidate people. He's pushing people around. He's knocking people over, especially that are ostensibly weaker than him. Mm-hmm. He's being a bully. He's being a bully.
Which comes up in the movie.
Just very briefly.
Initially, because they stand up to him.
That's right. And she slaps him or whatever, and that happens in the book. But it's just a very brief thing. In the book, it's very clear that the only cowardly thing he does is be a bully. That's it.
So it's more the asshole lion.
Well, something like that. But what's interesting is, in the story, in the story, it's very clear, coward equals bully. Pure and simple. There's nothing else.
That's because Baum doesn't get particularly nuanced. He does that kind of stuff. He wants to make a point, and that literally becomes the mythology.
Okay, but this is what interests me about this is, first of all, that's true. Bullies are cowards.
There's no
question about it. And it's never, when he's being a bully, it's never questioned that interpreting his behavior as cowardly that's never questioned by him or anyone else. And from that point on, he's called the cowardly lion, but from that point on, he doesn't bully anybody, but he also doesn't do anything else that people might be construe as cowardly.
Yeah.
Now, but I think what most people, I don't think most people think coward equals bully today. I think most people today think coward equals, for lack of a better term, sissy.
Well, to a degree, but I would say a lot of people say bullies are cowards. But that the reverse of bully is a subset of bullying is a cowardly act. But there are lots of other cowards.
Yeah, but that's true. But when people hear the word coward, they generally think of a very particular kind of behavior that's not bullying. It's that simpering, hiding stuff. And like I say, sissy. And the reason I use that word, it's deliberate, is because the cowardice and the sense of coward has been pretty heavily gendered, I think. I mean, think about, what do people say when someone's being afraid? What do they tell them? To man up, right?
Because in the grand tradition of gender traits, bravery, cowardice is supposed to be the opposite of bravery, and bravery is a decidedly masculine trait.
Right. But then that means when you're afraid or when you're hiding or simpering, you're being feminine.
Yes.
Biological extension in that stupid binary.
And again, because of that thing, it's you can't be gender neutral in your act.
Yeah, right.
So to do something counter to being a man is to do something toward being a woman.
Right. But I mean,
and to a lesser degree, the opposite. So if a woman is brave, they say, "Oh, she's being manly."
Well, or they're being positive about it, saying, you know, "Oh, yeah, you've you even hear women tell each other to man up and cowboy up and things like that. You even hear that between women. So what I'm curious to know is, culturally speaking, back in 1900, was when people saw that cowardice and bullying were directly correlated with one another, with no other kind of sense of what cowardice is, did that come off as a critique of how they naturally saw things, or did everybody understand that and think, yeah, that's what cowardice is?
I suspect the former. Just because history is littered with bullying and not a lot of people saying, you know what, that's cowardly.
Well,
I feel like it would have come up more if that was really how people saw things back then.
But it wasn't questioned in the narrative at all.
Well, no, but that's his world for it. I mean, that's
Well, now he was a feminist. He was married to the daughter of a famous suffragist, and so maybe that was a deliberate thing on his part.
Well,
and
there's also a lot of things in there. There's a lot of statements and generalizations that he makes that aren't necessarily untrue, but aren't necessarily a given socially either. Right. I think.
But also, the party of four there, Dorothy, the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, and the Cowardly Lion. The Lion is the only unambiguously male character, when you think about it.
Except the Tin Woodsman.
Well, who used to be a person and had all of his parts gradually replaced as they got cut off.
Oh, so now he's... Okay, who was masculine, but now we don't even know.
Yeah, now he technically doesn't have a sex. And the Scarecrow was never a human, so... So the Lion is really the only unambiguously male character in that group of four.
Now I'm just seeing the Tin Woodman lamenting that he doesn't have a heart, and then as a side note, he's like, also genitals. I'd really like some of those.
Well, what's interesting... See, here's the interesting thing about that. His backstory is this. He was in love with this woman, and also... Just kind of as a side note here, Munchkins aren't little people. Did you know that?
No, they're not. Yeah,
they're just average, normal people. But anyway, he was a Munchkin, and that Munchkins that is basically just describes the county they live in. That's not their race or their whatever. But anyhow, he's a Munchkin, and
yeah, a lot of stuff that we now attribute to sort of race, like species differences in the bomb stuff is actually just political.
Yeah, yeah. Things. So
the Vinkies and all those are just people from different countries.
Countries in Oz, right. So he's a Munchkin and he's in love with this woman and she says, well, and he proposes to her and she agrees on the condition that he can build her a nicer house than what he lives in. He just lives in this little cottage in the woods. He's, oh yeah, that's fine. I can do that. I'm a woodsman. I'll just cut down enough wood. I'll build a house.
And that man grew up to be Abraham Lincoln.
Well, okay. So anyway, that young woman lived with an older woman, didn't say if it was a grandmother or mother or anything, just an older woman, who wanted this young woman to keep living with her and doing stuff around the house.
Oh.
So she went to the Wicked Witch of the
East
and said, hey, you gotta help me out with this. So the Wicked Witch enchanted his axe, so every time he tried to use it, it would cut off one of his limbs.
Yes.
And so then a tinker, really, tin smith or whatever, would give him new parts. Everything was replaced, all his legs and arms and head were replaced, but not his torso yet. But then the axe split his torso completely in down the middle, so he got a new torso.
Which points out another thing. Stupidest person in the party may not be the Scarecrow.
Well, that's another interesting thing about I liked about the story is that for there was
after,
a.
I'll even give you two limbs.
There was a.
I'll say the first time you're like, "What are the odds?" But after you've lopped off two limbs,
but
pick another.
The
three.
Idea is it's love. He's doing it for love.
Yeah. So go and get a new job and save up the money to have somebody build you a house, or at least switch axes.
But anyway, when you were saying that. As now that he's all made of tin, he doesn't have a heart and also genitals. Well, this was so he could marry a woman and have a family and stuff. So that is kind of interesting. But anyway, there's one a very interesting part of the story is where
they probably could have saved the genitals.
The Scarecrow,
at least half of them.
The Scarecrow and the Tin Woodsman are arguing about because the Tin Woodsman doesn't have a brain either. He doesn't care about having a brain. He just wants a heart. And the Scarecrow's like, yeah, but having brains is better. So they kind of talk back and forth a little bit about, oh, wait, which one's better? Of course, neither one thinking, well, we could just ask the wizard for both if we wanted to.
And the lion's like, no, the ladies love a bad boy. Here's what I think you should
do. But it is a really fun story. It's actually quite good.
And here's what I think you should do. And I mean this seriously. I don't think you're going to do it, though. So you read that book.
Yeah, and I liked it.
Maybe read some more if you feel like. I don't know. There's a couple that are actually Oz-focused, and after that, they really just go off the rails. Then maybe rewatch the movie for comparison. Mm. And then pick up the Gregory... What's it?
Or read Wicked?
Yeah, Wicked and, yeah. and Son of a Witch and yeah, all
I,
those.
I did think of maybe doing that. See, the whole reason I read it, though, it doesn't... I mean, I read it for a specific reason. That reason's pretty much served just by reading the first one.
I just think it would be academically interesting.
Yeah,
I
yeah, found yeah.
So, and less back-to-back, even.
Yeah.
Because it is an interesting bit of taking the actual material in some cases. In some cases, definitively rewriting it. Like, contradicts both the movie and the book and stuff like that. And in some cases, just filling in gaps, because Baum has so many gaps.
Yeah, well,
it makes it very interesting, and it's another one of those perspective shifts. And then you, to really do it, after that, then you go see the Broadway play. Because I like the Broadway play. It's really a different story in a lot of ways.
Well, while I like the book quite a bit, and I encourage anyone to read it, I think in the final analysis, I do prefer the film, even though there's music in it, and I hate musicals, but I do prefer the film for one reason and one reason only. And that's because the Wicked Witch of the East in the book is not much of a character. I mean, she's just, there's several challenges they have to get where they need to go, and she's just one of them. There's nothing really interesting or spectacular about her.
She's a pair of socks in the movie.
Oh, I'm sorry, the Wicked Witch of the West I meant.
Oh, okay.
Well, and actually that's...
So much more sense now.
Actually, that mistake makes a good point, because the Wicked Witch of the West in the book is not much more than the Wicked Witch of the East. I mean, she talks, and she's got a chapter, but the challenge in overcoming her is really not that much different than a house drops on her and she's dead. The character that they create for the film is genius. I mean, genius, I think. And what the actor did with that role,
yes,
genius.
And I would actually say, by an order of magnitude, I think the character in the book, the Wicked, is genius. I read the first two books, and that's as far as I got. I wasn't as into the second one, but the first one is just about her, and that's the thing. The musical isn't the same story, in that the musical is largely about the strange relationship between the Wicked Witch of the West and the Good Witch of the North, because they have like history and it's their odd and changing relationship.
Although she's the Glinda, right?
Yeah, Glinda.
But she's the Good Witch of the South in the books.
Okay, but while that is definitely a factor in the book is essentially the story of the Wicked Witch of the West, and it's fascinating. Well, and for starters, she's essentially a political activist,
right? And her appearance and several other aspects of her character come from the character they created for the film,
yes,
not for the book, because there's nothing to really work with in the book.
No, at this point, I think a lot of people just start from the film in a lot of things.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if I told you this. So, poppies.
Mm-hmm.
Poppies will make them sticky. And they do until Linda makes it snow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie, but you know that's not snow. Do you know what it is?
What? Like, in Hollywood, don't they use soap flakes or whatever?
Nowadays, they've got some things. This was back in the day.
Yeah.
It's goddamn asbestos.
Really? I thought they always used soap flakes.
No. For the longest time, fake snow was asbestos.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Why, that seems like something
asbestos
I should
have known. It's like radium. Radium and asbestos were two of the biggest, like, miracle products until everybody found out they'll kill you. And I say this as somebody who hasn't done it myself, do not ever Google image the term radium girls. That's a specific thing, because there was a time period where radium was in everything.
Yeah.
And it was awesome because it glowed, so they would paint it on things.
Yeah, and they'd lick the brushes
and, yeah,
to make
them
sharp.
There were specific
sharp
women who did this, and mm-hmm. and oh, it was horrific.
No, it's a terrible story.
Yeah, because and in this case, I mean, you know, who knows? It's not quite like the tobacco company, but really, people didn't know, and so it was just insane. And the same thing with asbestos, just freaking everywhere, because it does. It has such amazing properties, asbestos.
Oh yeah, yeah. For like oven mitts and
All sorts of things outside of cancer, but it has really amazing properties for cancer, and that you don't want amazing properties in that sense.
But the thing is, the Wicked Witch they created for the movie is the Wicked Witch of the West in the book is such a minor nothing character that they pretty much created the Wicked Witch of the West for the movie out of whole cloth. Yeah. And I'm just saying, it's genius. Yeah. And the fact that they could make a compelling novel that I haven't written, but I know quite a bit about.
Yeah.
And I probably will read it.
It's
just
and gritty. Be ready.
I realize that, but it's just a testament to how brilliant a character that was, and how brilliant that character was portrayed by the actor in that film.
And it makes them do interesting things. They do interesting things with the wizard too, and interesting things with Glinda. I like it. It was a trip for me. Like it's almost traumatizing to start reading it because it is such a drastically different and much more. It is the opposite of Bump. Like it is very real and gritty and almost too much in some cases. Like both in terms of just the reality of situations, but also in terms of the reality of like people can be really shitty to other people. It's all too far too realistic in its way. It's kind of disturbing, but it's really impressive. We're so almost out of time, so let's draw a thing.
All right. Drawing things from the hat for Christmas. This is our Christmas question.
Perfect question.
This year. Jazz wants to know, who is your favorite character on TV right now? If you have one. I presume she means anything that's on TV character. Right now.
Yeah, see, and I got stuff that's coming.
Right now.
Literally. Baby, hit the guide button. Let's see what we got. Literally on TV right now. The only thing that comes to mind, and I'm not sure it's the right answer, but it's the only thing that comes to mind, is Sherlock Holmes on Elementary.
Okay.
Full disclosure, I haven't watched any of this season yet. It's sitting on the DVR, and I feel like things are going to be weird this season. But I find him a fascinating character. He's not a likable character. He's not a character one would wish to emulate, but I find him very interesting. I'm trying to think of shows that I'm watching that are current.
I'm going to cheat a little and give an answer of a show that's still running. It's in hiatus right now. Does that count?
I think so. If it's going to come back, yeah, I think that's fair. Just not things that are like reruns.
Norma on Bates Motel, absolutely my favorite character right now.
I've been having brushes with on the internet. The people who are really into Bates Motel are really into Bates Motel. I don't want to discount your recommendation. In fact,
well, it's not a recommendation. It's a
no. It was
just me saying. Oh, I did sort of recommend.
Recommended it.
That's
to
true.
Me,
I did,
and it was a really big deal for a couple different reasons. which means, insofar as I do anything, I will watch it.
Okay,
but this lately has made me think even.
Even
maybe I need to check.
Oh,
it out.
More okay.
But we're still sure. How many seasons are we at now? Is this four or five? Or?
They're gonna have the third coming up.
I thought we already had three.
Have they already had three? That's a good question. Maybe they have.
It's tricky. I don't know if Trish is gonna want to watch it, and that's the death knell. If Trish doesn't want to watch it, then the odds of me getting around to it.
And that's fair.
Low.
That's fair.
Because why would I watch television by myself when there's video games and shitty horror movies and porn?
I get it, but there's a lot of shows that are running right now that aren't on right this second, but are running, and you know, like we're probably keep watching Penny Dreadful and you know stuff like that. Yeah. But
what are we watching right now? We're watching Into the Badlands. Nobody on that is my favorite character. Nobody.
A close second, but if I had to pick a character where they're not in hiatus right now, I'd have to say Supergirl is a great character. I love watching that show. I love watching that show.
Nick Offerman's character on this season of Fargo.
I didn't know he was in it. Maybe you told me and I forgot.
Yeah. at first he was just sort of this token, almost comedic relief in a way.
Yeah.
But he's been around more and you're starting to sketch out an actual character and it's really kind of interesting. He's absolutely a conspiracy theorist and a hardcore libertarian. But then also like a nice guy. But it's very weird. And the inveterate drunk, which is an issue in the show. But we're not finished with it. There's two episodes left, and I feel we have to get them out this weekend because it's done, and people want to talk about it.
Yeah.
People are obsessed with this season. People are like, I had somebody just today say that may be the best season of television I've seen. And this is a guy who I know watches Breaking Bad and things like that.
Mm.
And he said this was really amazing. And I don't know that I go that far. I do think maybe I like it better than first season. But as I've said before, it's taken me a while to get into it where it didn't for the first season for some reason. But once I got into it, it was pretty good. What shows are we watching right now?
When Jessica Lange was still in American Horror Story, her, whatever character she was playing was my favorite probably for a long
American
time.
Horror Story since
she is so awesome.
Couple episodes.
She's not in the season. She's not in the new season, but.
Fargo, Doctor Who. The current Doctor Who I like.
Yeah, I do too.
Quite a lot.
We've talked about that.
They're going weird places with him, and I'm feeling a little uncomfortable about
well,
it.
Well, I haven't watched any. I mean, I watched only.
Last season.
Or
of,
something.
The first season of Capaldi. This is the second season.
Okay, yeah. So I've only seen
but it's
a little bit.
Well, and I think some of it started happening then. They sort of tweaked his look, and so he's still old, but he's like hipper now. Like he wears a hoodie. And he plays electric guitar for no reason. Weird stuff like that.
But he does play guitar, right? Didn't you say he was in a band?
Oh, he was in a band. He was the front man for a band.
Yeah.
In the 70s. I mean, who wasn't?
I wasn't.
I was born in 77, but in 78 I was rocking out. Yeah, Sherlock and Elementary. I don't know. Yeah, when I see The Expanse and The Magicians, I may have other ones. I feel like there's other shows that we're watching, but I can't remember what they are.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Norma would have to be my favorite.
I was a little sad to discover Best Time Ever has been canceled and is not coming back. It's a Neil Patrick Harris variety show that he did.
Oh, and a variety show?
He did a live variety show that was amazing.
I didn't know that.
Holy shit, that
oh,
show
man.
Was amazing.
I gotta see that.
First of all, it's live. It's in Queens.
I don't know if I care about
giant,
that so much.
But. No, but I mean, I don't mean in terms of at the moment, but I mean just in general. It
in
feels
a live,
different when it's live.
Okay, in
you know,
a
like
live
they
audience.
They have screw-ups, they have surprise, you know, stuff like that, and it's all live, so they can't really mess with it. There were a few times when they had technical difficulties because it was an amazingly elaborate show. It had all sorts of different segments. Most of the time, the starting segment involved randomly picking someone out of the audience and then showing that they've secretly invaded the fuck out of their lives for like 6 months.
Oh, no.
Like the first episode, he was talking to people. He was like, let's get somebody from the audience. He brought this couple up and they're like, so what have you been doing? And they're like, oh, we went to this baseball game last month. And he's like, I know. Because I was there. And you find out they had this interchange with the mascot, and it was Neil Patrick Harris. Like, well, the big thing is we got married in the summer. He's like, I know. And you see, he's in the back of their wedding pictures. He's hiding in the car that they're going to take.
And they really didn't... This isn't just a bit?
No. No, because he did it a ton. He did it... People helped them, is what it is. They had one with a dad who does all this crazy stuff, and he wasn't there, but then they had him... The dad went on all these like TV shows that they filmed with the actors and stuff like this. And it's all these, they're very sort of intrusive that always make me a little nervous, but it was always a family member came to them to set it up.
Mm.
And they always ended by giving them like a trip. Like, you know, you're going to Cancun for a week or whatever, you know, it was always this kind of stuff. And he did one with his mom, his mom's birthday. She showed up on the show and they recreated their whole living room on set without telling her. And they said, there's a couple of shows she really likes and they got actors from that show to like wish her happy birthday and stuff like that.
Boy, I never even heard of this.
It was insane. And then they had a regular one called Sing Along Live, which was like a karaoke thing. And they would bring out original artists for songs. It was mostly classic songs. They only did his cheerleader song, but like they brought out the B-52s to do things like that. And what would happen is they had snuck Skype cameras into people's houses with the help of them while they were watching it live, and they would call out names, and the camera would be on, and the people would be sitting there, and they'd call out the name, and all the family members were like, ah, oh, we got you, and they would sing along. It was a karaoke thing, and if you got it right, it was amazingly easy, you got $1,000. And they would do this every week.
So why would this show not get another season?
Let me even tell you, there's still more shit going on. They did weird. They would do Neil versus, where they would go up against a guest, like, or an audience member or something, and these weird challenges. The very first one was him and Reese Witherspoon climbing. There was this race climbing this giant scaffolding, like, stories high in the air. It was terrifying for them. But they were, I mean, they were on guidelines. Because that's the other thing. Every episode had a celebrity announcer in the announcing booth. And it was all, like, Kelsey Grammer did it. Reese Witherspoon did it. Jack Black did it. Just also, Tyler Perry did it. All these people. And then, and there were other things. There was a little game show component where people, somebody from the audience would come up and they would answer questions and they would win prizes. And depending on what number they picked, they'd win different prizes. And I feel like that's how the show paid for itself. There was so much corporate synergy. Everything was brought to you by somebody.
Okay.
And then, they'd be plugging things. And apparently, they frequently would do a thing where the next morning they would appear on the Today Show and talk more about what they did. And then there were certain sort of one-off things. And there were just little joke things. He had a little version of it, little NPH, that was supposed to be a little kid version of him that would go around. And then Nicole Scherzinger eventually got little Nicole. And so they did little bits with them. But the thing ever at the time was always at the end of every show, they had the end of the show, which was, this is the part you would have loved. They would have performers come up and do some big spectacle.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it was circus performers.
Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Sometimes it was tumblers. Sometimes it was magic acts. And he would be involved. And almost always, it would involve him doing something that he had just learned doing that week. Like some serious, like, physical act or something.
Oh, wow.
And again, doing it live, so he could totally screw it up. And it was, I mean, if it had been any more often, I would have gotten sick of it. It was an hour a week. It was awesome. And I felt like it would just go for goddamn ever because there's so much corporate tie-in. There's so much. And they could pimp all the stuff that's coming up. But, like, the Jeep Trailhawk was a major sponsor because that was always one of the prizes you could get and stuff like that. But apparently the ratings were just absolute shit.
Well, see, here's the thing. You call it a variety show.
And so did they. And nobody watches those. That's part of the
problem. Yeah. I mean,
every few years there's an attempt. Maya Rudolph had it a couple years ago.
Here's the thing.
And people don't watch it anymore.
You know, the golden age of variety television was actually just ending as I was growing up.
Yeah,
but I loved it. That was my favorite stuff. And
Laughing was on its way out.
Carol Burnett. I mean, all of that stuff was.
Smothers Brothers.
Yes, Smothers Brothers.
It got confusing because Smothers Brothers got to come back for a while.
Yeah.
And that was, I remember, in the
80s,
you know, I think.
Sonny and Cher. And it didn't bother me that, you know, someone would have a variety show for a season and a half and it'd go away because someone else would then have a variety.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It just, they were just a staple of TV and then they were gone.
Yeah.
And shortly thereafter, I stopped watching television anyway, so it wasn't such a big deal. But of course, recently I've sort of kind of realized, hey, wait, there are no variety shows anymore. I have heard that people have tried them in the subsequent decades and nothing's happened. So I would like to see
this one. It's to their credit. They managed an entire 8-episode season because a lot of them get canceled after one or two.
But there's something about variety shows. People will not watch them. It doesn't matter how cool they are.
It seems, I think they just think they're dumb somehow. It's like,
But what do people think they're doing when they watch 600 YouTube videos all day? Well, I mean, that's the same thing. It's basically variety entertainment. You're watching a variety show, and you're sitting in there watching
it. I think people view variety shows as reality TV without the melodrama. And the people who
like
reality... I know, but the people who like reality TV like it for the melodrama.
No, I realize that.
And nobody is cheating on anybody or breaking up with anybody on a variety show.
I mean, I
think it's awesome.
I love variety.
It's a whole bunch of things that I find are cool, but in small doses. Like,
yeah, so you
I
won't
wouldn't
get bored
want to watch a bunch of people doing trampoline tumbling.
No,
acts
me neither.
For a half hour,
but for one act, and then you've got sketch comedy.
You know,
you've got
some singing,
a ventriloquist maybe, or a magician.
Absolutely.
Like all this stuff, it's like, oh, this is great. And like you said, it's all in small enough doses that you can't get
some of those
bored.
The old bloopers and practical jokes. They had some things where they did practical jokes on celebrities and stuff, which is amazing. He's really good at disguising himself.
Like people don't recognize him? Wow.
He disguised himself. He was, I believe, they were going to do the voice
the TV show in Austria. And he was showing up to watch them and interview them because he was the Austrian host. And he was this guy. and he just asked all these ridiculous questions and all the
normal with an Austrian over. Accent?
Yeah, he totally had a thing and he had like a beard and stuff. It's amazing. and stuff like that. He did this thing a couple times now where he'd get a celebrity to agree. Something was going to happen. Like they were interviewing for a new like gardener or something. And they had a piece in. And they had to do or say whatever he told them to
in earpiece,
when the interviewees would show up. And so it got really silly and crazy that way.
Well, no, when you think about it, the late night TV hosts still, they keep a live variety entertainment away.
Yeah.
I mean, because they'll have sketches and they'll have music acts and sometimes they'll have people doing.
Less so than it used to be. Yeah. More interview, but there is some. Well, and actually, I just got to see today. So Nick Kroll is a comedian. And he had a sketch comedy show for about 3 seasons on Comedy Central, The Kroll Show. It was okay. In it, there was a reoccurring bit he and John Mulaney, the comedian, did called Oh, Hello, where they pretended to be these two characters who were basically very old New York Jewish men and also like single and kind of skeevy. And that was sort of the joke, too, is that they were a little creepy in their way. Well, apparently, they successfully turned this into a play that is in New York right now and doing pretty well. So they, as their characters, showed up on The Late Show with Seth Meyers, and he interviewed them about it. And I just got to watch that today, which is mostly fun because it cracks Seth Meyers up constantly. They have a whole bit about their old friend Bernard Sanders, who they used to they were terrorists with. They were part of, they were in Vermont, they were the Burlington Three. They firebombed the original Burlington coat factory, and one of them's like, what, Bernard's running for president? President of what? Having a Band-Aid on your forehead? No, president of the United States. What, who's gonna vote for Bernard? They call him Bernie now. What, this whole thing? And it's that same thing. It was this very meta. It was essentially a sketch comedy within an interview.
Yeah.
We are over time, so let's talk about this in a few minutes, by which I mean 2 weeks from now, by which I mean 1 week for you guys.
New Year's Eve for you guys.
Something like that. So, Merry Christmas from Payless, which was a chain on the West Coast that now is Rite Aid, and that's why on the West Coast, Payless Shoe Source was Volume Shoe Source growing up. Because they couldn't have Payless because there was already a Payless.
Well, it's Payless Shoes now here, so.
No, I know. Growing up, it was Volume Shoe Source. Same people. Yeah. And it was fun because every once in a while they would run the wrong commercial. and also, Edie's Ice Cream.
Okay.
On the West Coast, it's Dreyer's Ice Cream. I have no idea why, but if you look at the containers, it's clearly the same ice cream. So that's weird.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.